Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yo, what is good, everybody? And you are listening to the Sunday, March 31st, 2019 edition of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, and I'm the lead boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports, where you can get boxing articles and more at thechtonsports.com. That is thechtonsports.com. Number to dial in for the hotline here is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. We have a fairly busy show here for this particular weekend. Of course, we had last week off, as I was live at the MGM National Harbor for that fight card there that had Lamont Peterson going up against his opponent there, where you saw him have his last fight of his professional career against Sergey Lepinets. We did like have a small show on Monday, going through that. But, you know, here we kind of like we're going to, you know, carry things on as far as like what's going on this week. We had a fairly busy week in the boxing ring. We had like a few cards that were out there. There was, one card that was on ESPN last night. You had action on the zone as well. So we're going to be touching those particular fights. And we will have a special guest on the show scheduled for 8 p.m. Eastern time. So be on the lookout for that. But want to get right into it with the action that happened over the weekend. Starting off with what happened down at the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia, PA. You had the main event there as the WBC light heavyweight title was on the line as Oleksandr Gvozdik took on Dudu Ngumbu. Gvozdik was there 16-0 with his first defense of that WBC title after winning it from Adonis Stevenson last year, going up against Dudu Ngumbu, who was there at 38-8. Had his, couple of times when he was able to challenge for a world title but was unsuccessful. He did, have a string of losses from 12 off until, 2017 that were part of his career, losing to the likes of Andre Fanfara, Igor Mikhalkin, actually, losing to him twice. And also Najib Mohammadi, who is, another world title challenger in the light heavyweight division. So he was able to come up there against Oleksandr Gvozdik. Gvozdik was, pretty much trying to get in there, get an impressive performance there for the crowd that was at Philadelphia. And, most people felt that, Ngumbu was overmatched. Like I was saying, his, string of losses that he had, he was, out four, pretty much 4-3 in his last seven fights or so. But, with this last win, his last win was over in France. which, you know, put him in this position to go up against Gvozdyk. So he gets this a shot, and, you know, Gvozdyk pretty much was trying to, you know, impress the fans that were there. There were a few fans that came in there for, you know, to support him. So he was, you know, trying to be fairly impressive in those first couple of rounds there, while, you know, Ngungu is trying to see if he could find any openings there on Gvozdyk. And it looked like he kind of like got a couple of them here and there. So what we kind of like seen was Gvozdyk trying to pursue Ngungu while Ngungu was backing up, and trying to catch Gvozdyk with a one-shot counter. And, you know, he was able to get a few counters in there in those first couple of rounds, but, you know, even with that, you still had Gvozdyk as the clear person with the advantage there. And, you know, he was able to, you know, kind of, you know, work in on Ngungu and, you know, soon enough try to, you know, get him pretty much cornered. And, you know, in the fourth round, he was, you know, getting, you know, more of that advantage there against Ngungu and was pretty much getting the big shots in there against him. And then, you know, going into the fifth round, Ngungu, you know, still tried to get his counter shots in, but still with Gvozdyk there with the clear advantage. And then, at, you know, pretty much right around that 1 minute mark of the fifth round, had Ngungu backing up to the ropes. And when he backed up to the ropes and actually touched the ropes, he kind of like put in some weight on his right leg. And he kind of went fairly awkward when he backed up. And he started to have lots of pain there, and he nearly, you know, went down to the canvas on one knee, but just, you know, kind of like had a hard limp and exerted lots of pain there in his right leg. And the referee stepped in there and, you know, kind of gave Ngungu a 5 minute rest break. When it was a clear injury, and you saw that Ngungu was in lots of pain, didn't look like he was going to continue at all. So I don't know where they had that rest break coming in there for him at. And after about a few minutes, the doctor came in and officially put a stop to the bout, as they should have immediately done 3 minutes earlier. So Gvozdyk gets the TKO victory in the fifth round, as your Ngungu could not go forward with the fight with the calf injury that he had there. And, you know, he immediately, you know, crumbled to the mat after the fight was officially called. So Gvozdyk moves to 17-0, retains that WBC light heavyweight title. You know, kind of like he really didn't get, I would say, like a lot of work in my opinion, there to kind of like work up a little sweat against his opponent. He, you know, was able to have his, you know, his voluntary defense. Of course, you had Marcus Brown that's floating out there as the top contender for the WBC title, and he was, you know, definitely saying that he wanted to fight Gvozdyk for that WBC title. So, you know, we'd like to see if he's able to get that worked in there so that he'll be able to face Gvozdyk for the WBC belt. I mean, we're, you know, kind of like seeing Brown as the top-rated contender that doesn't have a world title there in the light heavyweight division. He had that recent win over Battery Jack, was able to, you know, get that win over him. And he just wants to, go ahead and step up and fight for a world title. So we got to see if Marcus Brown is able to, you know, get it up, get it against Gavazdic, or, you know, maybe Dmitry Bivol or somebody out there with a world title in the light heavyweight division. And Gungu pretty much, you know, just has that one shot. Wasn't able to, you know, take advantage of it whatsoever. Like I said, he was, you know, 38-8 coming into this particular fight. And I gave you the list of guys that he, you know, lost to over the course of his professional career. And, I mean, if you, you know, check out, you know, some of the guys that he did lose to, I told you about McCalkin, Muhammadi. I mean, most of these guys were already world title contenders before, you know, he was able to get a shot here at a world championship in the light heavyweight division. So he won't be in that vicinity for quite some time, unless if he gets a position to fight a higher rated contender and is able to get the win. So that's what we have there so far with Gavazdic and Gungu. I mean, Gavazdic is, you know, known as, you know, one of the top guys there in the light heavyweight division. Like I said, you have Dmitry Bivol there with the WBA title, Kovalev with the WBO championship, and Beterbiev with the IBF title. Bivol, you know, went over to the zone. So you might not see him against the likes of Gavazdic or Kovalev. And, you know, Kovalev, you know, had his recent fight, that rematch that he had, where he was able to get a clear win there to get that WBO title back. So now he could, you know, go out and try to see if he could have that unification bout against Alexander Gavazdic, or maybe have that one more title defense before having a unification fight. So that's what it looks like the thing there in the light heavyweight division. And the thing about in that UFC podcast, you had Gidegis Kavalauskas going up against Ray Robinson. Kavalauskas is, you know, coming in there undefeated, 21-0. A top contender within the welterweight division, most notably in the WBO rankings, as he is the top-rated guy in the WBO rankings. We know him out. The WBO welterweight champion, Terrence Crawford, going up against Amir Khan on April 20th. So Kavalauskas was, you know, trying to keep his spot there in the WBO rankings, going up against Ray Robinson. Robinson is, you know, floating around there in the welterweight division, 24-3 coming in this particular fight. He did, you know, have a fight against Yordanis Ugas last year in Las Vegas, where he ended up losing by TKO. And that kind of had him have a definite setback in the welterweight rankings there. So he wanted to get himself back into it with his fight against Kavalauskas. And, I mean, for me, Ray Robinson, you know, looked like he was executing what he wanted to execute as far as, like, boxing Kavalauskas, using his southpaw stance to kind of throw off the contender there. So, for me, it just seemed like something where Kavalauskas wanted to have a impressive performance against Ray Robinson, but Ray Robinson just didn't really allow that to happen. He used his boxing skill. He was able to, you know, keep range for most of the time against him. And the thing about it is that you had Ray Robinson get through, you know, most of those rounds where he kind of like had a little bit of an advantage against Kowalewskis, and nothing where Kowalewskis could really hurt Ray Robinson. So what you have there is that it went through 10 rounds and it went to the scorecards, and two of the scorecards, one from Dave Braslow and one from Kevin Morgan, had about 95-95, and one card had it from Rose Lassen, 97-93, therefore at Ray Robinson. But with the two scores of 95-95, that made it a majority draw. So that means that both Ray Robinson and Gidegis Kowalewskis had their first draw in their professional careers. And it has Kowalewskis really, they're kind of like pretty much stuck, because he was, you know, able to get a draw in a spot where Ray Robinson was fighting pretty much in his home area. But he didn't necessarily get the home decision victory over Kowalewskis. And you saw that Ray Robinson clearly felt that he wanted to fight. You know, he was able to outbox. He said that he was able to outbox Kowalewskis out there, and that he was, you know, the one that could have had that shot against Terrence Crawford. And, you know, him and Crawford had some type of history back in the amateurs, so he wanted to, you know, get back in there and have another shot at Terrence Crawford there. So that's what you got out of this particular bout, was that, you know, Kowalewskis there, you know, at the time was 21-0 and put himself in position to be a top contender in the welterweight division with his wins over the past year. But here against Ray Robinson, he just couldn't necessarily perform well enough to kind of like get the overall advantage over Ray Robinson. So, you know, what ended up happening was you had Kowalewskis and Robinson score a majority draw in that particular fight. Just here live, got like a few more moments before we have our guests on the show. If you want to get in for some boxing talk, if you're listening live, you could call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. You had like more action that was out as you had Ryan Garcia in a bout against Jose Lopez over in Indio, California. Of course, you have Garcia there that was undefeated coming in 17-0 with 14 knockouts, going up against Jose Lopez, who was 20-3-1 with 14 knockouts. And, you know, it was something where you kind of like seeing Garcia being featured as a guy, you know, one of the young prospects that are out there in the boxing scene. You know, they talk about Garcia. They talk about Devin Haney. They talk about Gervonta Davis. You know, they talk about Shakur Stevenson as, you know, four of the guys that would kind of be carrying the sport in the next generation, so to speak. So, you know, Golden Boy has Ryan Garcia as their kind of like a poster child of sorts for, you know, their promotional banner. So, you know, Ryan Garcia there was, you know, trying to be very impressive and kind of in this fight fairly quickly. and he was, able to do that, being very impressive in those first couple of rounds, knocking down Jose Lopez in round two, and, being, way too overwhelming for Jose Lopez, as Lopez didn't come out for the beginning of the third round, and retiring on the stool before the third round, giving Ryan Garcia his 18th victory, and that registers as his 15th knockout there. So, he pretty much is floating out there in that super featherweight division. He is a top-rated contender there in the super featherweight division. He's rated number one in the WBO. He's rated number three in the WBA. So he looks like he'll kind of like have that shot at a world title fairly soon here. So you will pretty much be on the with Ryan Garcia. You just got to be able to put him in that right position there. So we'll just be waiting out to see if Ryan Garcia is going to have that particular world title shot there before he gets in with the likes of a Gervonta Tank Davis, which has pretty much been a topic of sorts over the course of the past few months or so. Of course, we know about what Floyd Mayweather said about Ryan Garcia and having him kind of like step up against his fighter. And like I was saying, you have other young guys out there like Devin Haney and Shakur Stevenson floating around those weight divisions. So you have Devin Haney there over at lightweight. And Shakur Stevenson is, also floating around those weight classes to kind of like give people something to look forward to there in the near future. But with some of these guys, they have been able to position themselves to contend for world titles. Now this, particularly this early in their career. So that's what, we were able to see there with Ryan Garcia in his bout as he headlined the Golden Boy card in Indio, California. He also had, action over in Liverpool in the UK, as you had Liam Beefy Smith going up against Sam Eggington. Beefy Smith was, a world title contender. He did have that fight against Canelo Alvarez back in 2016. He, had a couple of fights against Liam Williams in 2017, and also a challenge for the world super welterweight title again last year against Jaime Munguia, where he lost a unanimous decision to Munguia over in Las Vegas, going up against Sam Eggington, also a guy that, was there in the UK, had tried to float around and go after a world title shot, but was set back before he could even contend for a world title. So you had those guys there going up against each other, and it would seem like it was a thing where Sam Eggington just was not fully prepared for Liam Smith. Liam Smith was able to, I would say get the most of Eggington there in this battle, and he got seriously hurt in the fifth round, and pretty much within the first, the first minute of the fifth round, Liam Smith got to Eggington once again, and Eggington's corner put a halt to the bout, throwing in the towel within 2 minutes left there in that fifth round for Liam Smith to get the win over Sam Eggington by a TKO victory. Was for a minor super welterweight title there in the WBC. So pretty much would kind of like see see Liam Smith into the rankings there for the WBC fairly soon after this. He's able to improve his record to 27 wins, 2 losses, and 1 draw. And kind of like be waiting it out for what happens with the world title situation there in the super welterweight division. Of course, we had the announcement last week that Jared Herd will be going up against Julian J-Rock Williams on May 11th in Fairfax, Virginia for the WBA and IBF versions of the Super Bowl title. You have Tony Harrison and Jermell Charlo pretty much set for a rematch for the WBC title. And we've got to see what's going to be next up for the WBO champion, Jaime Munguia, as he takes on Dennis Hogan on April 13th. This is going to be in Monterrey, Mexico. So that's something that we're going to be looking at there for the super welterweight division. But Liam Smith getting that win over Sam Eggington. And also you had, the one of the topics around, boxing boards and boxing social media is what happened in the fight between David Price and Cash Ali. David Price has, been out and about in the heavyweight division, was 23-6, had, losses to Alexander Povetkin, Sergey Kuzmin, Christian Tamer, Ken Tepper, Tony Thompson a couple of times. Just not able to get into the overall contentions for like a title shot or something to where he would be contending for that. So that's the thing there that we kind of saw where David Price ended up getting disqualified, or Cash Ali got disqualified because he ended up biting David Price after having a point deduction for pulling down on David Price's head. So that's what we got out of that. Real quick, before we get our guests on the show, wanted to see if we could, get things situated here before we get them on. What I wanted to do there was get our got a caller in here. Eric Cofile.
What's going on, James? It's Mike Grady. How you doing, man?
Doing good, brother, mate. Doing good. We had like a few things going on this week in the boxing scene. You had like Ryan Garcia in action, Gavastic defending his WBC light heavyweight title, and Kavalioskis and Ray Robinson having a majority draw. Was there like anything this week that you were able to catch or able to see, through highlights over the course of this weekend?
Yeah, I definitely saw the Ryan Garcia card, and I thought Ryan Garcia looked pretty good. But before I talk boxing, I have to mention something about another sport. My boys, Auburn University, our Final Four team, I want to immortalize them on some form of online media. All right, back to the regular schedule program, boxing.
Well, let me
be able to, you know, win that SEC tournament championship and then move on in the Elite Eight to defeat Kentucky in overtime. So, they are in the Final Four. We'll see them out there on Saturday, next Saturday. So,
yep. But, yeah, so Ryan Garcia, I mean, you can tell the quality of training that he's getting under Canelo's trainer. I forgot his name. What's his name?
Oh, you mean Chapo? Eddie Reynoso?
Reynoso, yeah. You can tell the level of sparring he's getting because, so, you know, you can see even when he started the fight, he had, like, Canelo's mannerisms, kind of stuff, how Canelo maneuver the ring. Like, you could see that he's definitely watching Canelo and kind of doing that whole little thing. And what else I thought was impressive was his ability to, you know, go from, you know, boxer to letting his hands go. Like, he was throwing some mean shots, and he just overwhelmed the old guy, old buddy, with the shots that he was throwing. And so it reminded me of like how Keith Thurman used to box, and then he would seamlessly go from boxer to like laying them hands earlier in his career. But I mean, that changed obviously with the more elite competition. I hope they don't move Ryan Garcia too fast. You know, I hope he doesn't bite off more than what he can chew, like asking for the big fights, like, you know, in time. You'll get the big fights, like build your confidence,
right.
You know, like switch from that boxer style, let your hands go, do that to a, you know, a bit more stiffer competition. You know, somebody mentioned it in the telecast, like they haven't seen him with adversity. Take a little, have a little adversity, defeat that test of adversity, and then step up. Don't rush it. You know, like you can tell he has what it takes, I guess, like, maybe for the smaller division, but I would just say don't rush it. If I was his team, do not rush him. Like, I heard, you know, Golden Boy and all that saying that, you know, we'll get a title shot at the end of the year, but who is the weakest person that he could face that wouldn't give him, okay, I know I'm saying this, but, like, what's the safest fight for him?
For Ryan Garcia, the thing about it is that, I mean, they currently have him right now as a top contender for one of the titles, the WBO super featherweight title. You know, right now it's like either they put him in position to kind of like challenge for that title or try to give him a, another stay busy fight. And depending on what we have off of this and how the momentum goes from that, you know, maybe he just goes ahead and tries to, you know, pursue, you know, a world title shot. But, you know, they already have, like, I think they may have something in the works for that WBO title to be on the line against someone else. So, that may mean that with Garcia, they have to have another state busy fight for him. They're not going to match him up against Lamont Rose Jr. Those are two guys that are pretty much within the same promotional company. And I don't know if they're going to do that before having one of those guys challenge for a world title. I'm not sure if they're going to, you know, put those guys together in the ring before that happens. So with Ryan Garcia, maybe, you know, they have him have a stay busy fight, or if he can't get the WBO champion in the ring, then maybe they have the WBA regular champion or WBA world champion put in there against Ryan Garcia, as Tank Davis is the super champion there in the WBA. So, I mean, that's what we're kind of looking for in that particular aspect.
Yep.
What about the did you catch the ESPN card that was on in the evening?
I saw the end of it. Like, I saw the disqualification, I guess. But that was it. I didn't see much of the fight on the ESPN card, no.
Oh, the thing that you so you saw the disqualification, the highlight.
Was I thinking of the wrong card? Somebody got disqualified, right?
Yeah, that was on that. Yeah, that was the Cash Ali David Price.
Okay. So I remember turning over to the ESPN card and then seeing something. I don't know. I didn't see the card. No.
Like at the end of that one, they had the challenger there, Google. He had a right leg, and that kind of stopped the fight. The fight there between him and Alexander Kobosic. So Kobosic was able to, you know, retain the WBC light heavyweight title in that one. So that was what happened in that ESPN card, or the main event of the ESPN card.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely didn't see it. What happened though? He hurt. He got hurt.
With that, I mean, Kobosic pretty much was, you know, kind of like going through the motions a little bit. Was fairly impressive. And Gugu really didn't affect him that much. He was throwing like counter shots, but not really affecting Kobosic to like kind of have Kobosic stop his momentum. So. You know, once that fifth round happened and Ngungu, you know, backed up to the ropes, that's when he suffered his, you know, pulled his right leg muscle, and that kind of like did him in, and they ended up stopping the fight after about, you know, a 3-minute break or so, when they should have called it official right when they kind of like recognized the injury that was out there. Real quick before I try to get the guests on live, got another caller in, 813, what's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Terrell Thomas from Tampa. Just being great to call it to a great show. And real quick, in regards to the fights that you just mentioned of last night, Kobosic versus hey, Blue Bro, you got an echo on your line.
Hold on, what was that question?
So you have a bit of an echo on your audio.
Hold on. Oh, is that got me there?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah, so I think it's something with Mike. So that's probably what it was.
Yeah, real quick. So that Kobosic, I keep trying to say this guy's name, Magubu, Mgubu, something like that. I think Nigerian descent, something like that, whatever. It wasn't a real action-packed, and that's simply because Mgubu, I'm sure you'll correct his name for me, he just had a weird style. He just constant movement. And it's like the wind blows, he moves that way. May have worked for him at some point in his career, going against the champion and fighting for a belt. It doesn't lend to an offensive style and a pretty style in order to garner points that win a championship fight. So I'm this observant guy and everything. Like, yeah, I know he's moving, but even the moments when he does throw back, he's throwing counters. He wasn't being an aggressor at that point. At neither point in the fight. Like I said, aiming the stuff he was throwing back at Kobosic was of no real concern, you know, to the champion, or no threat at all. So he probably somewhat of a mandatory, I believe it was, but he doesn't offer a lot of resistance at all for the champion with his style. Like I said, just virtually no real offense to keep Kobosic off him. Not that Kobosic was doing a great job himself. Like I said, he just kind of, in a sense, going through the motions. So a typical fight in that regard.
Yeah. Very difficult fight for him in that instance.
Is not available.
Let me see if we got I was trying to see if I got someone in there. But, yeah, in reference to Kobosic, I mean, it wasn't like, there was much of a issue there with him against Ngungu. So, I mean, I kind of, like, expected him to walk through his opponent, especially, you know, you had Teddy Atlas there as Kovacic's trainer. You know, with that, you know, I kind of like expecting him to, you know, I would say just execute the way that he was, you know, able to usually execute before. He had that world title shot against Adonis Stevenson. And, you know, basically get the win and see, you know, what would be next up for him. I mean, he, you know, has that talent there for Marcus Brown that, you know, wanted to, you know, get in the ring against Gavaza for that WBC title. But, you know, he also has those possibilities of unifying the titles against the likes of Sergey Kovalev or, you know, Dmitry Vival, maybe, or against Artur Beterbiev. So, you know, with this fight here with Kovacic, he kind of like just said, you know, make sure I just have my voluntary defense before I have the option of facing my mandatory or trying to go ahead and unify the titles. What do you think about Kovacic's chances there in that light heavyweight division as far as like seeing that if he would put himself as one as the top guy in that division?
Before I even answer that, just a footnote in regards to Kovacic. It was certainly during the broadcast glad they were here. They reported that Adonis Stevenson had been in rehab all this time. He's made progress. He's walking again, talking again. And actually, they stated that he went home to visit home, so stuff like that. And even just flashing back to that fight between Kovacic and Stevenson, it never seemed like he took that much punishment, that type of rough punishment. But nevertheless, you saw the end result of that fight with him being hospitalized for quite some time. So kudos to him for making a recovery. And I promise you we'll be seeing him retire from boxing in regards to the injuries that he suffered. But with Kovacic, I mean, just looking at the fight from last night again, you know, he didn't wow you in any way or regard. And like you stated, you kind of expected him for him to get the guy out of there, right? And it's kind of similar to a couple weeks ago when Errol Spence fought Mikey Garcia. Because that the difference in size, speed, talent, all those things like that, you want him to get Garcia out of there. Same thing with Garcia last night. Because this guy, he's a veteran fighter, hasn't done anything special throughout his career, but why didn't Garcia get him out of there? So in that regard, he didn't wow us. So in that sense, from the Stevenson fight, we probably regarded Garcia at a slight level above some of the people in the weight class, just by unfortunately kind of bracing down back down to earth in a sense. Like, so I see pretty much an even playing field with him, Dmitry Vival, and even Kovalev to agree, and even the newcomer Stevenson, like you mentioned, Marcus Brown, that is. So just kind of just even playing field now, so we'll see who rises to the top, and hopefully we can get some of the fights that we want to see, champ against champ, and look for some unification fights. That's what we're always looking for.
Yep, exactly. No doubt, especially there in that light heavyweight division, you know, where you have a lot of guys that are around the top. Parts of that particular weight class, like you're saying, Kovacic, Vival, Beterbiev, and Kovalev, also with Marcus Brown as a, you know, challenger there in that division. But real quick, just getting the call in from our special guest, so we're going to, you know, get him in here now. He is from Flint, Michigan, and he is coming in here. He has a current record of 26 wins and 3 losses there in the super middleweight division. I want to bring in Brother Andre Durrell. What's going on? You're on the Boxing Source Radio Show, Brother Andre.
Boxing Source, I appreciate you guys having me on. Everything is going really well.
No doubt, man. Just getting you in here. Of course, like I was mentioning, you're there with from Flint, Michigan. You know, had a few fights here, notable fights that were, you know, recent in the boxing ring. So, you know, just wanted to get you in here, kind of like talk a little bit about what's going on. I know that you're, you know, back in the gym here, kind of like seeing you on social media, having those workouts and, you know, training really hard. So Just wanted to start off with what's the current scene with you right now?
Like you said, I've been in the gym working my butt off. A lot of people don't know it, but I recently, the day before Thanksgiving, I broke my fibula bone, and you guys probably saw a hint of that while they were broadcasting my brother's show directly before his fight. You guys can see me in crutches there. I broke my fibula bone playing soccer with my boys, man. It's fun. It's really ironic to me how I've been boxing my whole life, never had a serious injury. Messing around and play with a couple of balls, and boom, there you have it. Got one of the worst injuries of my career. But I healed really fast. Took about a little under 3 months to heal and really get back in the gym and get to working like I wanted to. But ever since then, which has been about a good month and a half, I've been working really, really hard. I've just been getting in shape, and I've been negotiating with Al Heyman at the same time. We're going to move up to 175 light heavyweight division and make some noise there, some really loud booms that will be. That's a definite. I'm, like I said, I'm working my strength, I'm working my power, and my footwork as well, man. So you guys can expect to see me there in June.
June, no doubt. So, yeah, you were talking about that fibula injury, and that's like, yeah, a real, real bad injury that you have to, you know, kind of like slowly work on trying to get your strength back down there, you know, with your lower body and your legs. And you said it only like took, you know, a few months for you to like recover from that. So, you know, kind of like go through, you know, some of the exercises that you had to go through in order to get through that rehab process.
Well, like I said, it took a little under 3 months. And, Man, first off, I had to lay off, which was really hard to do. I had to lay off for the first 3 weeks to a month. I decided to lay off for the first full month because of the swelling. And what I took it through before I knew it was broken, I was actually trying to walk on the thing. Once I got the diagnosis of a break, I continued to walk on it. And when they put me in the cast, and I was walking on it so much, it separated further. So they had to go in, put the screw in after a month, and screw it in, like I said, nail the screws, and then it healed. And once it started to heal up, once I was able to walk on it, that's the first thing I started doing. I started walking maybe two blocks, you know, just probably, I'd say about 50 to 60% pressure on it, you know what I'm saying, just kind of building it back up. And then I began with bands, you know, really, I really would sit down on the bench or a chair, and I would take the bands in my hand, and I would just flex my calf muscle, flex my foot, just back and forth, just building it back up. And I did that for a good week and a half, along with a little walking on, like I said before. And slowly after it started building up, I got with my man Steve. He's a strength and conditioning coach at my local boxing gym here in Boca Raton, and we started building that back up, man. And we've been doing some phenomenal exercises with it. He actually tested me more than I thought I needed to be, you know, in fear of breaking it. But he knew my limits, and we got it done, man. And I'm telling you now, just like they say, after you break something, it can heal and be stronger after. That's how I feel. That's what I feel is going on right now, man. I feel a lot stronger, you know. I'm in excellent shape for being out of camp, you know. And once we take off and head for camp soon, I'll definitely be conditioned well enough to start sparring out of the gate.
So how does that strength kind of like, you know, show? Because you said like you're back in the ring, kind of like moving a little bit, training down there in Boca Raton. So how is that strength kind of like showing out as far as like results are concerned, as far as like your overall movement or trying to carry power from the, you know, your lower body up to your upper body with your punching?
Absolutely. Well, the thing is, a lot of the injury caused my calf muscle to literally turn to jello, man. I couldn't believe my muscle could be that soft from not using it for so long, and I couldn't believe how soft it was. So when I started training back, like doing those exercises that I mentioned to you earlier, I could flex my muscle, but barely. It, knots, all kinds of knots and cramps inside of the muscle, You know what I'm saying? So when we started incorporating those exercises and I felt that my calf was strong enough, I decided to get a good 3 rounds of sparring in thanks to Herman down at King Kong's boxing gym. He got me some work a couple of weeks ago. And I tell you, man, I decided to go 3 rounds of straight dancing pretty much just to see how my calf would react to actually sparring, because you can hit the mitts, you can hit the bag, you can work out and not have to worry about those, like, reaction moves from an opponent's punch, you know what I'm saying? So when that happens, when all that comes into play, then you'll really know how good your the results of your leg are. And I have found out, man, and like I said, it's really at 110%. I got a minor little pain there, but it's nothing that I haven't felt before, you know. So it's work as far as that aspect go, man, it's very strong. It's very strong.
Gotcha. Now, you're saying that, you know, you're kind of like setting up to getting back in the ring around June, some months there, the light heavyweight division. Is that something where, you know, depending on who you face, the light heavyweight, and how that result goes, if you're going to, you know, be there, you know, for the next few fights or so, or you're going to, you know, contender coming back down there to the super middleweight division?
You know, a big fight would have to call me back down to 168. Like, if I could fight Canelo, you know, that'll be the only thing I see dragging me down to 68, or even Triple G, you know, my old rival back in the amateur days. But other than that, yeah, I'll be at 175 chasing the titles, you know what I'm saying? So I end up getting up at the 204, my biggest ever, man. Literally, when I broke my leg and had to lay off, I ended up getting up 204. And once I was able to get mobile, I made sure that I wouldn't – I mean, that wasn't a set deal. You know, I got the training, and I keep myself at around 192 right now, literally no more than 192. So I would say I'm about 190 right now. I want to be 13 pounds heavy when I hit the camp, so I like to walk around 188 when I'm off.
Yeah, 188. Yeah, that way you don't have to – you'll cut down on more than 15 pounds once you get into ring for a fight there, because you don't want to trying to cut down all that weight to try to make weight instead of be training there. So I guess that's you know, what we're looking forward to there in the 175-pound division. But, you know, also wanted to, you know, touch on, you know, you being from Flint, Michigan, having that background, a lot of Michigan fighters, a lot of history there. Being from Michigan, and then, you know, also, you know, having your brother out there in the ring, currently the WBC super middleweight champion. You know, real quick, go through that particular fight there where he was able to get that belt.
I was my brother in camp pretty much the whole time, man. He was definitely putting the work in. Getting ready for Yeardom. I never can pronounce the boy's name. You know, I knew he wasn't much of a factor, and that was proven the night of, you know. But I wanted, other than his great performance, it was a really good performance by my brother, but I was on pins and needles because I watched my brother box, and he can do that very well when he wants to. He decided to let Yeardom throw punches, or they decided to kind of trade war stories there, man, and that's what I didn't like. But watching it on TV really satisfied my ego, man, because they're at the fight. I was really pressured and telling them to keep boxing, keep giving them angles, keep moving. And, you know, Adam decided to fight his own fight, which was a major success, man. He did an excellent job, man. I'm very proud of him. And he's definitely keeping the Durrell name alive, man. And like I said, man, he did an excellent job. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to do in the near future.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, we have, like, you know, a few plans are out there for him with that WBC super middleweight title, and, you know, keeping within that Michigan family, a Flint family. You know, you also had, like, a very huge supporter of you and your brother Anthony Durrell by the name of Clarissa Shields, and she's preparing for, you know, a undisputed fight that's coming up too as well, that's going to be on Showtime. So, I mean, I've seen her, you know, be, you know, near your corner or at your corner in a few fights, you know, including over in MGM a couple of years ago. So, you know, talk about having that type of support, you know, within that family around there, within Flint in that general area in Michigan?
We're really turning, first off, we're really turning Flint, Michigan into a boxing state, man. You know, you fly to Flint, Michigan, you'll see the Olympic gold, silver, and bronze medals first thing as you walk into the airport. That's a really big thing. So we're representing Michigan to the Flint to the fullest, and they're also supporting us. When it comes to Clarissa Shields, man, Chris Bird, I just got the phone with him today, our old-time Olympic medalist and former world champion, Anthony Durrell to Clarissa Shields, man, you can't beat it. Support is just wrapped around 360, man. I just was actually in the gym with Clarissa Shields yesterday. She just flew back from Denver to finish her camp here in Florida. She had last spot with Shakur Stevenson and some other big names out there, man, you know, just getting in shape and getting ready for this fight. She sparred my little cousin, who's currently 1-0, Darion Lawson, right now. You know, and she's doing an excellent job, man. This girl is an animal. I can't wait to see what she's going to do on the 13th of April. You know what I'm saying? And having her in my corner, man, that's really a plus, man. This girl is flamboyant. She's so positive. You know, she can seem very arrogant at times, but she just has a lot of confidence and belief in herself, and it's through her abilities, man. You know, she puts the time in the gym. She tortures herself. She does one thing that's hard as hell for her, and that's dieting, man. The girl loves to eat, you know what I'm saying? But she sacrifices so much, you know what I'm saying, especially by a woman's standards. You know, even in boxing or, you know, MMA or whatever you want to call these gladiator sports for women, man, she sacrifices, man. And I just want to say right now that I'm really proud of her. And, like, whether what happens in this fight, which we all know is going to happen, you know, but to have her in my corner, you know, that's a very big thing. And I love the support, you know, and Flint, Michigan just is behind us all the same, man, 110%.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Now, we've got a couple of callers in here that's also on the phone here with you, Brother Andre. Wanted to start off to see if Brother Terrell here that's on the line has a question here for you. He was the one that, like, assisted with me kind of getting you on the show. So I wanted to see if he has in store here for you.
Yes, sir.
Hey, what's up, bro? This is Terrell. Real quick, just I'm originally from Saginaw, born and raised. But definitely I've been around the world with the military and stuff like that and everything. But aside from all that, been a boxing fan since I was little, watching the Great Wars of Sugar Ray Leonard, things like that, with my father, things like that. But definitely from Michigan, like I said. But aside from that, just glad to have a part of the show. I was glad to see you respond. And just once again, just really just glad for that. So getting right to it, I know you already talked about it a little bit, but just talk about it a little bit more. In regards to how was your speed and mobility before your injury and versus how it was now when you did that little bit of sparring. And even on top of that, we just got done talking about the light heavyweight division. What factored into your decision to move up to light heavyweight? Have you surveyed the division? Are you targeting or just even within your camp, have you talked about targeting a certain belt, things like that, certain fights in order to get that title shot? So can we just comment about that, please?
First off, can you say your name for me again, sir?
Terrell.
Well, first of all, what I say, man, you know, thank you for serving our country in the military, man. I think that's a very big thing. I'm a former Call of Duty player, and that's the closest to war that I'll ever get, you know what I'm saying? So I commend you for that, my man. I really do, man. Thank you. You know, and as far as me serving a division, man, I've been paying attention. I've actually watched all four of the champions, man, mostly European. And at the time I did survey them, Adonis Stevens was once a part of that championship, but we just saw him recently lose the title to a very good fighter, you know. And I'm really prepping myself. Like, they're all very similar in style. You know what I'm saying? In height, even, you know, now that Adonis is gone, you know, and I hope he's healing well as well. I'm wishing all of the best for Adonis, man. You know, but all I know is this, man. I started off in the gym. It was really scary, man. Like I said, I wanted to use my feet, my mobility, and I couldn't. you know, so I couldn't really test my speed like I wanted to. It was just all about conditioning when I was down and out, so I would hit the bag, you know, as best I could, and it was I was doing more volume just to get the conditioning back, you know. I knew I wanted to move to 175, man. You know, I've been contemplating for a while, and the recent break and the added weight made me do so, and it brought me to the realization that this is exactly where I needed to be. You know what I'm saying? I know I can make a lot of noise here. I know I'll be champion here. No question about it in my mind. Let me just say that, you know. And it's a question of who I want to target, you know. Of course, I want to chase Bivol, the guy who just beat Adonis. I want to chase him all, but, you know, I'm going to be honest. First on my list is Bottle Jack. You know, like, he has the name. You know, he has the guts. He has the fan base. You know, and he has all of the workings of getting in there with any opponent and making it a dynamic fight. And we all know that Andre the Real needs to prove himself, you know what I'm saying, especially in this division. And I'm willing to do that, man. I'm willing to take all of the necessary steps to climb that ladder. You know what I'm saying? I'm looking for no handouts at all, so I don't need Al Haymon to boost me up on the charts to get me to that championship quicker. If it's the ladder I have to climb, then like I said, I'll climb every step, man. We're gonna work ourselves from A to Z. I'm taking all the necessary precautions, just like I said, and as they come, man. I have nobody specifically, but Badu Jack is definitely on my radar, man. He's definitely a big coming out fight for me. As far as light heavyweight division goes, man. So me and Al are talking about getting a warm-up fight, possibly two, you know what I'm saying, judging on how I perform my first one. And if Bottle will give me the opportunity, I would gladly look forward to it.
Gotcha. You got another question, Terrell, before I go to the next caller? Hey, got 205 on with us too. Right, 205, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still with you.
Hey, all right, there.
Hey, what's going on, Andre? Thank you.
Go ahead.
Am I still echoing?
Yeah, no.
Okay. So I'm gonna start talking. Andre, we appreciate you being on the show, man. Definitely glad to have you on the show.
And I'm glad to have been a part of the show, man. Anytime you guys are looking for an interview, I'm here. I'll be making a lot of noise, man. And I can't wait for you guys to see the outcome.
Nice. So you said that someone who's definitely on your radar is Badu Jack. How would you see that fight going with Badu Jack, especially in light of his recent, let's say, performance against Marcus Brown? How would you see that going?
Yes. Well, like, we have to look at it like this, man. Every fighter who's a real fighter, they come back from a loss stronger than ever, you know, and they look to more prove themselves, man, you know. So there's a lot on the table for Badu Jack, you know. So with the excitement that he already brings to the division, he's bringing that extra to it, you know, with the defeat, man, because he, again, has a lot to prove. And as for me, you know, I have a ton to prove, especially in the lightweight division. So whoever I get in there with, man, is going to be a real headbanger, man. That's what I'm looking most forward to definitely put on the show and display all of my talents in its truest form. You know what I'm saying? So Badu Jack, like I said, he has the name. He has the notoriety. He has the guts. I mean, he's an excellent dynamic fighter to watch. And so when you get in there, you see nothing short of that.
Definitely.
Yeah, Badu Jack is one of those guys that like, kind of comes forward and brings the action against his opponents, no matter who it's been against, especially, you know, in his time at this super middleweight division and then moving up to the light heavyweight and getting a, you know, world title there before, you know, challenging for a, you know, against Adonis Stevenson last year. Where he ended up having to draw in that particular fight before going up against Marcus Brown in his recent fight. So, you know, that would be a definite good fight for you to have there in the light heavyweight division to kind of, like, see where you're at there against the top contenders at light heavyweight. Other than, Battle Jack, as far as like a start, I mean, you have the, Beterbiev as the IBF champion, Sergey Kovalev as the WBO, and we recently saw Gvozdik, in the ring. So any of those guys there that hold a belt, who are you like kind of like eyeing first out of those four that's out there?
Surprisingly, man, or surprising as it may seem, man, Bivol. He is an excellent fighter, man. He's strong. He's a come-forward guy. I mean, he can go a full 12 like it's the first round. You know what I'm saying? So I got a lot to prove climbing that ladder. You know what I'm saying? And I'm looking forward to doing just that. So by the time I step in the ring with Bivol, I can definitely imagine myself being an underdog to a lot of the fans. But by the time I climb that ladder as well, they'll know I'll be more than ready to face an opposition just like that. You know what I'm saying? So I want to be the guy that puts that blemish on that man's record. And along with Kovalev and the rest of them, man, I want to finish out the last quarter of my career as the best quarter of my career ever. I got a lot to prove. And what's about to happen in my career, in my mind, people, I believe, are supposed to doubt it, but it's not the people that I have the faith in. It's God. And I believe he'll get me to where I want to be, man. I'll just keep the faith, keep working very, very diligently and very hard and toward my goal. And I believe I'll have it, man. I will definitely shock the world this year forward.
Yeah, gotcha. Let's see if I can get another caller in to ask a question. Right now on the line is 646, if he's there with us. 646, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, JR? This is Matt. You already know what it is, man. Appreciate Andre for joining the show today, man. I just wanted to ask him a couple questions about, where he's at in his career and what the future holds for him. I heard him talking about possibly matching up with a Badu Jack or something like that. But I'm just curious, do you have any designs on maybe moving up in weight to challenge one of the light heavyweight champions, or you're content with being at 168, basically?
Yes, I'm not sure if you heard, but definitely 175 is my new weight. That's where I'll be. First on my radar is Badu Jack. Like I said before, I'm getting a warm up fight in, possibly two. With at the light heavyweight division, me and Al Heyman just determined that the past week, and to see where I'm at, to see how I feel at this weight class, which I know I'll be fine. Like, I'm getting some great work. But first on my radar is Badu Jack, and after that, any one of the four champions, man. But trust me when I say I'm studying them all, I'm studying them all.
What did you have to say to your brother after he won his championship recently?
I'm proud of him. Anthony, he's been through an awful lot in his career, but he never looked down on himself. He's always seen himself as the champion that he is, even before you or any of us believed he could actually do it, excluding me or his family. Anthony is a definitely gladiator, man. He has a very, very strong mindset. And I believe after the fight, man, the first thing I said is, you did it again, against all odds. It was definitely earned, man. He put up a great performance, man. Yurgen brung the pain, and Anthony dealt it as well, man. He came out victorious, man. So I told him I'm proud of him. And whichever way he decides to go forward in his career, be it Benavidez, or a rematch for Yurgen, which I don't know about right now, then we'll make sure he's doing just what he needs to do to be able to get ready for either one.
Yeah, that's all I really got, JR.
Mm-hmm. All
right, true that. Now, Darrell, real quick, for those that are listening in, they – could follow you on social media. Do you have anything there that you want to tell them before I, like, go into one of the social media pages. So I wanted you to announce, like, where people could follow you on social media first.
Yeah. You can follow me on Facebook at Andre Darrell and Instagram my IG, man. You know what I'm saying? Both of them.
Gotcha, gotcha. You have that's Facebook, Andre Darrell, and also on Instagram, Andre Darrell. And, you know, on your Instagram page, you have a saying out there that really got me, and that is, change happens when the pain of staying the same becomes more painful than the pain that makes you change. You know, that kind of, like, moved me right there. And like, where did you get that from, and how does that, like, kind of, like, factor into what you're doing right now?
I mean, we all see it, man. A lot of you guys witnessed my career, and if you guys had to say anybody been through ups and downs, it would have been Andre Darrell. You know, I'm an emotional guy, man, and I really didn't know how to decipher the two from life and my career. You know what I'm saying? So I let them kind of both get kind of intertwined and intertangled with each other. And if I'm down in boxing, I can easily be down in my life. If I'm down in life, I can easily take it to the boxing ring, man. So I have to decipher the two. So with that being said, man, with the roller coaster ride that I've been on, you know what I'm saying, I now consider it a thrill, man, because it caused so much change and so much more need to complete my mission in my life. And I'm really proud of the fact that God didn't allow me to succumb to the disappointments in my career or my life, man. I can look at it. I can tell my story. You can either be saddened by it or motivated by it, and that's what I want. So a lot of the content that you see on my page will be motivating. I'm looking to motivate and motivate only those who are in my shoes and those who are trying to figure out which way they're trying to go in life. You know, I'm hoping I can motivate you guys and get you guys going up on the right path. And you just have to understand above all that no matter what today may bring, man, tomorrow is still coming. If you decide to lay your head down to God, wakes you up the next morning, then the next morning is here. You got to do the best you can with it. You know what I'm saying? So my life has been a roller coaster, man. I just enjoy the thrill, man. I really do, man. It's made me a stronger person, a more wiser person, and it's just more dedicated, you know? So the pain that I've been through, man, it just caused my fight to get stronger and stronger. And I honestly do believe that you guys will see the best Andre yet. The Matrix Reloaded.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's just something, man. You just got to wake up every day and just say, you know, go through the day and make sure that you're able to do better than you were yesterday so that you'll be able to just keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing out there, man. Pretty much just, you know, covered everything that I wanted to out here. Is there anything that you know, wanted to say to, you know, fans or callers here on the Boxing Source Radio Show?
I said it all, man, but basically just stay motivated. Find a reason to keep going. Don't stop. Life will happen, you know, but it's your life. It's your life. Deal with it the best you can. Take every single day, minute by minute, you know what I'm saying? And that's pretty much it.
Gotcha, no doubt that. Once again, I thank you very much for coming on to the Boxing Source Radio Show, and we'll be catching up with you there on social media. And when you have that fight certified and locked down, we're going to be announcing that. And then keeping tabs with you so that we see you on that trek of moving up there in that light heavyweight division there, brother.
Amen.
Hey,
I really appreciate you.
One last question before we leave.
All right. Mike has one more question.
So, Andre, who do you think is the best heavyweight out there and why?
The best heavyweight out there and why? I will not answer that question. I mean, listen, man. Put it like this, man. Put it like this. I'm not going to give you a name because I just think Anthony Joshua is an excellent fighter and mainly puncher, but hear me when I say fighter. You know, when it comes to boxing, I mean, he's as basic as they come. With that being said, I still love to watch his performances. You know what I'm saying? I'm still looking for that heavyweight that stood out like Waterman Klitschko, man. He was an excellent boxer. I mean, he knew how to keep guys at distance, at bay. Whether he was pressuring him or fighting against the pressure, he was really good at keeping him at bay. And I always loved watching Klitschko fight, both Klitschko's, actually. You know what I'm saying? The most motivating heavyweight out there and the one I always look forward to watching is Deontay Wilder. Pure point blank, man. This guy has reached levels no one, and I mean probably no one, would ever imagine he would have gotten to. Just being offered a $100 million contract and looking back after the Olympics, after 2008 Olympics, you know, where everybody told him to stay amateur until he sharpened his skills, you know what I'm saying? And then they continue to clown him through it all. Like, they will always talk about his style or his performances, the way he performed, you know. Why is he so successful? And this is the thing right here. This is why I love him so much. Why is he so successful? Because he believes in himself. That's not just something that's coming out of his mouth either. You know what I'm saying? He literally believes it. And that's what got him where he is right now, man, his belief, his hunger, his determination, his will to prove everybody wrong, and his faith in God, man. The guy is an outstanding man, you know what I'm saying, and an outstanding boxer, and I wish him nothing but the best, man. If I ever have the opportunity, I would love to go to the gym with that guy and just work out, listen to him, watch him do his thing, man. And just get motivated by it, because that's my thing. It's all about the motivation, man. We're all motivated for the moment, and people don't know how to get through life staying motivated. Deontay Wilder is one of those guys that can show you how. You know what I'm saying? So I would love to be in one of his camps, man, just to watch it for a week, maybe two. Don't be surprised if you see me in the background during one of the Showtime events.
No doubt. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, so I definitely think Deontay Wilder is the best heavyweight out there. No correlation to being from Alabama.
Yeah, most definitely, man. I love his attitude.
Maybe you might have an opportunity to see him there while he prepares for his WBC heavyweight title defense against Dominic Brazil. That's coming up on May 18th at Barclays Center. So if he has, like, anything coming up, you know, there in Alabama or, you know, maybe closer to the Barclays leading up to that particular fight, maybe, you have something set up to where you'll be able to get in the gym there to see him.
Definitely, man. I would definitely love that, man. Even then, hopefully I can be on one of his cards again, man. And show out with him, man. I would definitely look forward to that.
Yeah, no doubt, my brother. All right, is that all the questions there for Brother Andre? Does anybody else have something there for him? Looks like that's it. Like I said, thanks a lot for coming in, Brother Andre Durrell. And like I said, we're going to be on the lookout there for you. Keep going at it. Keep working to get yourself in full strength. And then once we have your start there in the light heavyweight division, we'll be able to let the people know and all of that. And once again, I thank you very much, y'all, for coming in on the show.
Most definitely. I thank you.
All right. No doubt. And we're here continuing on Boxing Source Radio Show. We've got about like a few minutes left here in this particular podcast. Pretty much, covered a lot of the stuff that, went on in the previous weekend. Doesn't seem like, there's, much action coming up for this first weekend in April. So we're pretty much like looking ahead to, what's going on. That next weekend, you do have Vasily Lomachenko defending his titles against Anthony Crowley. And we did mention the title fight there with Clarissa Shields going up against Christina Hammer. That will be in Atlantic City on April 13th. If y'all haven't been able to have that all access there on Show
Showtime for Clarissa Shields and Christina Hammer. So that's something that you may want to see there, kind of like see how both of those fighters are preparing themselves for that undisputed female middleweight championship fight that's coming up. So, I mean, for me, you have that fight there between Lomachenko and Krolla. That's going to be at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. Krolla, you know, getting that world title shot there once again at lightweight. He was former lightweight champion back in 2016 before losing to Jorge Linares twice over in the Manchester Arena. So he's, you know, getting back into it there against Vasily Lomachenko. And, I mean, my thing here is that, you know, with Linares, you know, being a very technical boxer, being able to, you know, do what he was able to do against Krolla. And Linares, of course, has, like, you know, much less footwork there in comparison to Vasily Lomachenko. While, you know, Lomachenko, you know, had his previous fight against Jose Pedraza, he was able to get a unanimous decision victory. I think that people kind of, you know, thought he would be really impressive against Pedraza. Of course, Pedraza did have his previous loss against Gervonta Tank Davis where he got knocked out. But, you know, here with Lomachenko, he was able to, you know, get through that fight and go through 12 rounds against Lomachenko. But I guess here in this next bout between Lomachenko and Krolla, maybe people are kind of like seeing if Lomachenko can get back into the ways where he was, you know, defeating guys like Linares, Rigondeaux, Jason Sosa, and Nicholas Walters. We got Terrell still on here with us. What are you looking at here with this fight between Lomachenko and Krolla?
That's for me, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's, you know, we talked about Lomachenko many times before, and it's kind of interesting when you look at Twitter. It's a lot of people that I follow, and people that follow me are based over in England. And it's what's funny, they are so fanatical about their fighters from the UK, and they follow them, they support them, things like that. And real quick, just the voice coming from England is they really believe their guy's going to win this fight. They really believe he's going to win this fight. I forgot how many losses that Krolla has. I think four losses, something like that, whatever, you know, a bit of a veteran in the sport of boxing. But when we talked about Lomachenko before, and we talked about the prototypical style that could beat him, someone that definitely has movement, someone that's very fundamentally sound, and definitely someone that has a good jab and someone that has power to give him pause for concern, instead of just sort of trying to dominate his opponent like he typically does. So does Krolla represent that? No, not necessarily. I mean, he's a sound veteran fighter. I'll give him that much. You know, typically when he stepped up, we saw that he took a loss, right? But like I said, it's just funny listening to the audience from England. They think that he's definitely going to win this fight. And you're supposed to support your fighter, but being realistic, does he have a chance? Does he have what it takes? I mean, he can get a lucky punch in there somewhere, but we haven't seen anyone do that as of yet to Lomachenko at this level, at this weight class. I mean, he's suffered a couple of knockdowns before. We're all just waiting for Lomachenko to fight either Mikey Garcia or either Tank Davis. That's ultimately what we're waiting for, and we'll be waiting for a while for that in that regard if we ever do get those fights. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that we are kind of like waiting for Lomachenko to have that quote-unquote super fight of sorts with the likes of, either, you know, Mikey Garcia or Gervonta Tank Davis. And, you know, with Lomachenko being there in the lightweight division, you know, we kind of have to see what's, you know, next there for, you know, you know, for him after this, the WBC version of that lightweight title is basically vacated after Michael Garcia moved up to, you know, the 147-pound division to face Errol Spence Jr. A couple weeks ago. And Richard Comey, you know, just getting this IBF title, I guess they want to, you know, just have him have one defense before, if they wanted to, you know, have another unification bout, you know, this time with Lomachenko against Richard Comey, then you'll have Lomachenko pretty much down there in the 135-pound division because, you know, you had him, you know, have his fight against Linares. He did get knocked down, you know, by Linares there in that fight that they had last year. So it's kind of like this may be his weight limit for him. So he'll have to establish the rest of his professional career there in the lightweight division. And you know, to be, you know, honest, I mean, he's already, you know, had that extended amateur career. So it's like unknown how long he'll be there in the professional ranks. And being there at lightweight, you only have like a few contenders that are out there at this particular point. It's like either you're going to have to wait for one of those younger guys to come in and step up to fight him, like a Teofimo Lopez, who's, you know, continuously said that he wants to fight Lomachenko, or, you know, wait for, you know, a Tank Davis to move up, or somebody else there in the super featherweight division to move up there to go up against them there at 140 pounds. So, like, here in this you know, particular juncture, this is what we're basically waiting on there for Lomachenko, is, you know, have this fight against Kola there in Los Angeles on the Friday, April 12th. And then, you know, after that, you know, kind of like see what's up with, you know, what's next out there for him. So, I mean, that's what we got there initially for the next couple of weeks. You do have the fight between Danny Garcia and Adrian Granados on the 20th of April. Also, like was mentioned before, Terrence Crawford against Amir Khan will be on April 20th on ESPN pay-per-view. So in the next few, you know, next couple of weeks, we're going to be kind of like, you know, I would say previewing those particular fights. So be on the lookout for that. As of right now, that pretty much, you know, covers everything that I wanted to do in this particular show. Thank everyone for calling in. I thank Brother Andre Durrell for coming in on the show to talk about what's going down in his professional career, him moving up to the light heavyweight division later down the line. So, like I said, we're going to be on the lookout for that. You could, you know, catch the next episode that'll be on next week, Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We have on Blog Talk Radio, you know, also partnered with sister shows, the Cold Hard Truth on Sports, and Take This L. But, you know, for the time being, this particular podcast is done. Like I say, at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm basically out. But before I'm out, just wanted to let one of the callers know that earlier today, I actually something up and ran with it. So there you go. I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Later, man.